Blog Talk Radio.
Johnny Boy, how are ya? Welcome everybody.
Hey,
welcome to a party.
How's everybody doing?
All right, good. Well, hoping everybody's good. I'm Joanne Barton, and of course, my most important guy in my life, other than my kids, my co-host, Johnny Riccio. Good, honey. How are you?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Well, we have a really great show for you guys tonight. We got the legendary LJW on tonight. Louis Joseph
J-L-W.
Walker. Cannot
J-L-W Walker.
I was just telling John what kind of craziness I've been going through the last week, so I apologize. My mind has been, if you listen to the show before and you think I'm scattered, I'm way beyond scattered today, so I apologize.
No problem.
Good. Well, before we start the show, let's just say thank you to our sponsors, the Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kittnersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times and Other Stuff in Clifton, New Jersey, FinTech Productions, Lenoka Harbor, New Jersey, Oleander Public Relations in Texas, Take a Break from Cancer.org for Pete's Sake, and our new family member, Joey Max, the Hot Dog Truck and Cafe in Harrison, New Jersey. Check it out, www.joeymax.com. And all of our sponsors, if you can just go to, while you're on our site, just click on their logo and you go to their site as well. All right. Well, with us tonight, we have two great guests. We've got legendary guitarist, blues guitarist, singer, songwriter, producer. He's done it all. JLW, Joe Louis Walker. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Good, honey. Thank you
so
much for joining us. Yeah, we've been waiting for you. We're very happy that you released your new CD.
Well, we're glad, you know, we can let it out. I think, you know, I want to let out a little bit of positivity and, you know, in tough times like this. You know, the blues sort of fits this times right now.
Oh, definitely. And I'll tell you, the whole CD, we received the whole CD, and it was just fabulous. It was so hard to pick what song to play for you tonight, but I figured we'd do the title tracks for you. Oh my God, Joe, you have played with everybody under the sun. I mean, what a life. I mean, tell us what's so amazing about loving the blues, and is that just feeling the blues makes you play the blues, right? I mean, explain the feeling behind the blues and why you love it so much.
Well, yeah, I sort of, when my parents came from down south when I was a kid, my dad, I think he wanted to be a musician, but he couldn't because he had to, you know, take care of his family. So he sort of lived vicariously through me. You know, he played me the records, and I can't tell you anything about grade school, but I can tell you that just about every other day my father would come home and play records for me. And that way, it sort of got me like Pavlov's dog, you know. If he couldn't play the records if I was bad, he wouldn't. So it just sort of was one of those things to where, and later on, about 12, I started playing with my cousins. We all lived in the Fillmore district in San Francisco. And so we, you know, it kept us out of trouble. relatively, and you know, we can make a little money. We can make a little money, and you know, and you're popular when you play music. You know, it's a good thing. It's a positive thing. So it's
right.
Something that I've been doing all my life. You know, I started playing music, and just like I am today, I never, you know, I just wanted to play all kinds of music. So I never categorized myself as a blues guitar player. But later on, you know, it sort of that was the category that I fit in, I guess. But I play all kinds of stuff, you know.
Right. I was going to say, you can't be strictly blues because you've played with so many other artists that aren't blues. I mean, Steve Miller Band, Nick Lowe. I mean, those are more on the rock side. But then, you know, you've got your Bobby Womack, Otis Redding, and everybody. And, you know, we had Shirley King on a couple of weeks ago and loved what you did on that, too. Oh, my God. Fabulous.
Oh, yeah. Shirley's a great singer.
Yeah, oh, no, we love she, and it was a pleasure. I mean, God, if you can't get B.B. King, you get the next best thing, right? His daughter, so. You know. Is blues obviously your favorite to play, or you really don't care as long as you're playing?
Well, I just put it like, if you categorize music as many different languages, then blues is my mother tongue. Let's put it
like that. Nice. Wow. Now, on all the people you've played with, I hate asking people this, but out of all the people you've played with, who did you find to be the consummate professional and you were in and out because everything was laid down and you were out the door?
Well, I think... You know, I've played with gospel groups, and I've played with blues groups, I've played with jazz groups, and I think, and rock groups, like some of the people you named. So, I mean, I could go, I couldn't sort of mix categories, but I could just say playing with BB was, of course, very professional, I love to say that BB took the blues from the outhouse to the penthouse, you know.
Yeah.
Playing rock music, I played a lot with Ronnie Wood. I've known Ronnie about 30-something years, and so it's always fun because he plays with everybody. You know, he just doesn't play with the group he's known. He plays with everybody, and you can tell that he's still got that same love for music as he had when he was 13 years old. And so I played a lot of jazz with a lot of jazz players, and I think, you know, playing with Herbie Hancock was a lot of fun, and Branford Marcellus. I made a couple of records with Branford, which I really enjoyed. Wrote some songs with him. So, you know, in that context.
Right. Wow. I mean, you played with everybody. My God, it's just amazing. And you know what? I didn't know that you played with all those people. I mean, all the songs that you played on, I didn't know you were on those. So it's like, wow, it just amazes me, you know? So you started with...
Hey, Joe. This is John over here, and I'm a blues guitarist too. Not at quite your level, but I've been following you forever, and I keep going back to, I think it was many years ago, I seen an interview with you, and you were describing how you have to have your own style. And a lot of the players today, they play like this guy, they play like that guy, but they don't have their own style. And that's what I think what makes you different from everybody else, because you have your own style. And you know when you hear the first lick of the song that it's Joe Louis Walker playing. And could you go into a little bit about how you developed your style by playing with all these other people? And I remember you saying that you listened a lot to the older players rather than jamming with them. You listen to what they had to say. Can you go into more about that? Because it's really interesting.
What I do, I'm a fan. I'm a student of the game first. So when I could be around some of those people, you know, that you were naming and some of the older guys, if I could be around a Johnny Hooker or Willie Dixon, or if I could be around, you know, somebody, and I would always ask. You know, I'd ask Steve Cropper, who, you know, Cropper produced 3 records on me, you know, like, you know, what you think, man? What you think about what I'm doing, you know? And you know, what do you think this sounds like? Well, it doesn't sound like anybody. Good. That's what I wanted to be. But I would go and hang around songwriters. That's what I did a lot. And I would Willie Dixon sort of took me under his wing. And I would go down to his house in Glendale before he passed away, Glendale, California, because I was in San Francisco, California at the time. And I'd spend weekends down there with him and just go in his back little cabin and you know, and work on my songwriting and ask Willie. And so he'd listen to me, and he'd come hear me play live. And I remember one day he told me, Joe, I figured your style out. And I said, well, I'm glad somebody did. Can you tell me what it is? And he said, it's all over the place. He said, it fits you perfect. You're not from Hard Time, Mississippi. You're not from Sweet Home Chicago. You're not from Zydeco Land in Louisiana. You're the Bay Area, and you're an amalgamation of all the blues guys who come to the Bay Area that you knew. You're an amalgamation of all the psychedelic guys that you know and play with, all the Zydeco people that you – he says, all that stuff's in your music. And he says, you keep it like that, you know. It's not like you're a jack of all trades and a master of none, but if you listen to all that stuff and you've absorbed it and you could put it together and on one plate, do it. And so that's what I look at, you know. And the other one was BB always telling me, you know, Joe, don't try to play like me. Albert King, Joe, don't try to play like me. Buddy Guy, Joe, don't try to play like me. And Willie Dixon again, Joe, you doing a bad version of you is better than you doing a good version of someone else. And so I asked him something a little deeper. And he said, he said there was different great guitar players, and I won't name them, that Willie Dixon said I would not produce them because they always wanted to sound like someone else. And if you listen to the guitar players that Willie Dixon produced, Otis Rush, guys like that, then you see how what he was talking about. You know, Willie Dixon didn't produce Buddy Guy. He didn't produce Magic Sam. He produced Otis Rush because nobody sounds like Otis Rush, and he doesn't sound like anybody.
That's right.
And so
that's right.
I really always took that to heart. And another thing to me is that I know what you mean, you know, that, you know, and I have friends, man, that became, you know, real famous and rich playing just like Albert King. You know, or playing just like, and what I do is that I call those guys stylists. You know, it's cool. You're a stylist. That's great, man. It don't let that style die. But I'm not going to play Sweet Home Chicago any better than Robert Johnson did and Buddy Guy and Magic Sam. I'm not going to hang my hat on playing Dust My Broom. I'm not going to do it any better than Elmore James did it. I might do it for a lock or play it on a compilation record, but I'm not going to try to hang my hat on that because it's like trying to wear somebody else's shoes. You know what I mean? I don't want to
try
to wear
somebody else's
shoes.
Nice.
That's
right.
I'm not, you know, I can enjoy it.
Right, of course. Be yourself. I mean, you know, I love that line you said, too. I mean, I got to ask you this. I mean, you've been doing this a long time. You started playing guitar when you were 8. Oh, since we were mentioning your dad, what did he play or did he sing? Or
no. Mm-mm. No,
he just loved music.
Yeah, he could sing, you know. But I mean, once he knew that he couldn't do it for a living, and I think me and B, the youngest of the litter, that I really believe my father lived his musical wishes vicariously through me, you know.
Nice.
And he didn't live long enough to see me get, you know, a lot of adulation, but he lived long enough to see me, you know, be a professional musician and join the Musicians Union and all that stuff. No,
right.
I mean, he was very proud of me, but,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, like I was starting the question, but I got sidetracked because I wanted to ask you about your dad, if he was a musician too. Not that you said he was loved music, but you've been doing this so long. How do you stay fresh and new? I mean, this new CD, it's fantastic.
Well, I collaborate with a lot of people, you know, and I keep a lot of young people coming through my band, you know.
Right.
I mean, since I've been on the East Coast for about 10 years, I think in my band I've had Vanessa Collier come through my band. Vanessa's doing real good now for herself. You know, she got her professionals really start in my band. I had a lady named Sarah Shore who moved to England, who's one of the biggest blues rock stars. And Morali Coryell, in my band for a while, Larry Coryell's son. Eric Finland, great keyboard player who plays with a great young singer named Eric Krasnow. Mm-hmm. He came through my band. I had a lot of young people, and I like collaborating, you know.
Yeah.
It sort of takes you out of your wheelhouse, and so that's that San Francisco thing with me, you know.
Yeah.
We like to mix it up. We invented jam band.
Right. Since you're from San Francisco, did you ever meet Jimi Hendrix or play with him at all?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did. What'd you play on? What song did you play with Jimmy?
Well, it wasn't a song. It was just a jam set.
Oh, you're just jamming. Cool. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, well, see, I was fortunate. I lived with a guy that was a big, big, big rock, blues rock star at the time. His name was Mike Bloomfield. And so when I lived with Michael, everybody would come to the house. Bob Dylan, Michael played on Like a Rolling Stone with Bob Dylan. Michael played on Super Session with Al Cooper. Michael played with the Woody Herman Orchestra. So everybody came to see Bloomfield. You know,
right.
And he, you know, Bloomfield made his name with the Paul Butterfield Blues Band. I don't know if you ever heard of him. But anyway, he made his name with the Paul Butterfield Blues Band. The guitar player, I know you heard of him, John, but I don't know. To make a long story short, Michael was one of the first guitar heroes in America. You know, one of the big, like, he, you know, if there was Eric Clapton in England, Michael was a guitar hero before he was here in America. And
wow.
if he'd have lived long enough, he'd probably, you know, be mentioned in the same breath with an Eric Clapton or someone like that. They knew each other, too.
Oh, wow. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Oh, right. So, anybody in particular special that worked on the new CD, Blues Coming On?
Yeah, we were fortunate. We had Dion singing the title track with me.
Mm.
And then I returned him the favor. I'm on his new CD. What's the name of Dion's CD? Blues with Friends. Me and him and Van Morrison. We did a trio thing.
Cool.
And then I'm on Mitch Ryder's on my new record, and I was on Mitch's album also, which came out a few months ago. I have Albert Lee, my friend who plays with Emmy Lou Harris and the Hot Band. He plays with Clapton, and we have David Romberg playing on it. John Sebastian, Kev Moe, Jesus Christ, Waddy Wattel from Keith Richards and Chris Rhinos.
Jesus Christ is on the album too?
No.
You
no.
said Jesus
but
Christ.
but I was born on Christmas.
Merry birthday.
Yeah, and I
hey,
have Yorma's on the record too from Hot Tuna, so it's quite a few friends.
Nice.
Yes.
Very cool.
Hey Joe, a guitar player, I want to know what equipment you're using right now and what guitar, because I know you've been switching like between a Les Paul and like an ES-335, right? What's your favorite guitar?
I've been playing a Zenitis a lot. You know, they've got the pearl front, beautiful guitar, but you know it's got a little kick to it. And I also have the ones with the metal engraving. And I got a few different companies that make guitars for me, that make a JLW guitar. One's a company out of Japan called Rosio. And they made me sort of like a 350T, the kind that Chuck Berry used to play. Remember that 350T?
Yes, yeah.
The blah-blah
one.
They made me one sort of like that with the two P90s. And I got another sort of Les Paul-style guitar that Jimmy Carra made for me. It's called the Hellfire guitar, made after an album that I made. So I got a few
of
them here.
How many?
You also
about 20.
That's it. Come on. I'm kidding.
Yeah, no, that's it.
Well, you can only play. You can only play one at a time, like they say, right?
Yeah.
Now you also play slide too, Joe. Right. So how did you get into doing the slide? I want to ask you about the slide too. Because when I play slide, I usually play it in standard tuning. Do you do a lot in standard tuning, or do you use the open tuning?
Yeah. If I'm playing a solo acoustic, I might tune it to Bastapool, which is a G chord, and I might drop down, if I'm playing in regular tune, I might drop down to D, like Elmore James and Johnny Winters used to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it depends on what I'm playing. But I like to play in standard tuning, because the guys that taught me how to play slide, they all played in standard tuning. Earl Hooker taught me how to play a bit, and Mississippi Fred McDonald taught me a bit. and they tuned to standard most. And Bloomfield taught me, they all sort of tuned the standard tuning. You know, although I can use the different tunings, but I use those mostly for my country blues. You know.
And what's your favorite slide? Because I see you use a brass slide a lot. Do you use like the brass or you like the glass? Which one do you like the best?
Well, I like the brass for acoustic, and I like glass for electric. But I sometimes just switch them up, you know. You switch them up. But brass has a little bit, it cuts a little harder.
Okay, one other question that probably nobody else is going to understand except probably me and you. What gauge strings do you use?
Yeah.
Well, I use 10 to 42, or sometimes on acoustic I use a little bit heavier, like 12 to 52 or something, 11 to 52. I don't like too heavy a string, you know, because it just makes you work too hard.
Did you name your guitars, Joe?
No, I don't.
No. Well, that's something for you to do during the coronavirus.
I know. Yeah, a lot of guys do that. But to me, you know, a guitar is just what it is. It's a piece of wood with some strings and some pickups. Nothing comes out of the guitar at all. Only thing comes out of it is what's in your heart and your hands and your mind.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
The guitar is an extension of you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of playing, I would love for everybody to hear your new song from the new CD. It's called Blues Coming On, and we selected the title track because they were all so good, and I just didn't know which one to pick, so I really didn't. They were all great. So what do you say? Well, everybody, here we go. Blues Coming On from the new CD.
Why don't
Nice.
Hey Joe, I gotta tell you that is absolutely amazing. I mean, my foot was just tapping like crazy. What a song!
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
John,
and when that guitar came in, that guitar, like, oh man, that was excellent. Really
John,
good.
I sent you the CD. You're gonna love the rest of it, honey. You're gonna love it.
Oh my god!
Amazing. That's just great. Oh my god.
Hey Joe, you were inducted to the Blues Hall of Fame. Is that am I correct?
Yeah.
Yes. In Memphis.
Excellent.
2013. Yes.
That is fantastic. What an honor that is.
I'm telling you, I just love that song, and the whole CD is fabulous. Where can everybody get the CD, Joe?
Well, you can go to my record company, Cleopatra. You can go to all the search engines, iTunes, Spotify, you know, the regular culprits.
I mean, I just love it. And what if anybody wants to reach you in particular? I mean, is there somewhere people can reach out to you?
I have a website, joelewiswalker.com. It's got all the information of, you know, the agent and managers and I think they got the record up there for sale, and it has a schedule. What used to be a pretty full touring schedule, we're playing a couple of drive-in shows here. We're playing, the one up in Plattsburgh. We're going to be doing that up there, and then we're going to be doing one. I think the 23rd, 24th this month in. In New Hampshire, up at the Tupelo Music Hall, which is a drive-in outside. So we're looking forward to that. That's not this weekend. I think next weekend.
And if anybody wants to find out those dates, they could just go to your website, right?
Yes. And we're doing if anybody wants to stay home and see if we're going to be doing a virtual the first virtual show. At Daryl's house, we're going to be doing that Tuesday.
Cool.
I think it is Tuesday or Wednesday. So that's cool. Also on, and we're trying to. If anybody wants to send in a donation, we're trying to, to help supplement all the people that work, behind the scenes, of the sound
right.
man, and the
right.
people that the food and everything, So
right.
it's for a good cause.
Right. Well, who's going to be joining you on the virtual? Other than
my band.
Oh, the entire band. Okay, cool.
I sort of like doing it the way, I want you to hear what you hear there. I want you to hear,
Right. Well, folks, I mean, oh, my God, what an honor, sir. Thank you so much for joining us. I cannot thank you enough. And the song is great, the entire CD. If you love the blues or just love great freaking music, man, it's not blues. It's great. It's everything about it. It's just fabulous. You can't it's not pigeonholed into blues. It's not. It's fabulous.
Thank you.
And the new CD is called, Blues Coming On. And we just heard Blues Coming On. And Joe, thank you so much. Joe Lewis Walker, everybody. Johnny, anything else for Joe?
Yeah, I just want to tell Joe that he's my guitar hero, and I was kind of nervous to talk to him tonight, and I just want to say not only is he a great guitar player, but he's a great person, and just thank you so much for coming on the show with us.
Yes, thank you, sir.
It's a pleasure talking to you guys, and keep it going on. We need you. Keep doing
keep it going on. We need you.
All yeah,
right.
We need you, Joe.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so
good
much,
Joe. Good luck, Joe. Have fun. Take care, honey. Bye-bye.
Okay. Yes. All right.
Nice.
Bye-bye.
Before we bring on our next guest, I just wanted to mention again that Joey Max just joined us, and they are from Harrison, New Jersey. They're a gourmet hot dog truck cafe, and you can pick up, they deliver, and they also have some seating as well. And they're in Harrison, New Jersey. Go to joeymax.com. Coming up next, we have author Mr. Martin J. Lee, and we found out the hard way that it was Martin J. Lee, and we'll talk about that. And I wanted to welcome Martin to talk about his new book called Recovery in black and white in America, and it's something that really needs to be touched on to regard to addiction in our country and how it affects everybody in every aspect. So welcome to the show, Martin. How are you?
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and I'm feeling great.
Excellent.
Hey, Martin.
It's a finally a pleasure to speak with you. We've only been typing back and forth, so, and I apologize for my abruptness if you've reached out to me lately. Anybody, I've just been a little crazy, so I apologize for that. So let's talk about this book, Martin. What is behind it? I mean, you were not originally an author when you started out in life. I mean, so how did you go about writing the books that you write and the topics that you come up with? I mean, are they based on experience or?
Okay. Everything I write about, I've experienced. Or let me put it this way. Everything I've written about so far, I've experienced. I lived it. My first book, The Anatomy of Abuse.
Yeah.
My father died when I was 5. My mother died when I was 10.
Oh, God.
I was taken in by a caregiver that abused me viciously, so bad I ran away.
Oh, my God.
And I knew I would be able to tell that story one day. I didn't know when. But I knew it was in me, and I would have the opportunity to tell it. My second book.
Thank God you're alive to tell it. Yes.
You telling me? Wow.
Right.
I mean, that was a horrific experience for a little child.
Sorry. Yes, I know. It's horrible. So sorry.
When I ran away, I was 14, and I never returned home. I've been on my own since I was 14.
Oh, my God.
And that's the grace of God, okay?
Mm-hmm.
My second book, The Vast Difference Between the African-American and the American Negro, was about my interracial experience with my own people and how poorly, really poorly, we treat each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew also with that, I knew there was a story to be told.
Yeah.
But and that I would be able to tell it. But my latest book, the one that we're here talking about now, Recovery in Black and White in America.
Nice.
It was an experience I didn't expect to have. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I would go through it. But when I went through it, again, I said, this is a story that needs to be told.
Nice.
So I sat down to pen this novel. And all the books I've ever written, anything I've ever written, never came to me as quickly as my thoughts and the stuff I put on paper that is in this book.
Mm.
I would sit down to write, and before I knew it, I had 10, 15 pages. I had 2 chapters.
Wow.
I mean, that's how fresh the experience was in my mind.
Right. And what brought you to this subject? I mean, is it from working with people like this and helping them, or is it like a true experience that you addiction in your life, your family, or?
I was an addict, an active addict.
Oh wow! Oh God! Yeah.
For quite some time, my drug of choice was heroin, but like most addicts, I did anything. But I really. My disease wasn't fated unless I had heroin.
Mm.
And it was really bad. My addiction took over my life, as it does most
it
addicts.
Usually does. Yeah, I was going to say, it usually does.
It,
yeah.
took over my life. And I knew it was time, but I didn't want to be 40 years old living that way.
Right.
So when I turned 39, I said, it's time for a change. I wanted to stop using drugs, period.
Right.
So I went into a recovery fellowship. And when I got in that fellowship, once again, another thing that motivated me to write my second book was the experience I had in the fellowship. Inner city meetings, which I initially attended, are predominantly African American, are predominantly minority. African American, Latino, predominantly minority.
Right.
And I came into the meetings with a female, mother of two of my children.
Right.
And she wanted to see other men. So in order to keep her her image intact, she told everybody I was beating her up. When I say everybody, the people we both knew in the fellowship.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe their reaction. No one wanted to hear anything I had to say. Mm-hmm. And I came home one night, and my kids were gone. They had taken my kids out of the house based on her words. And I cannot tell you the anger, and it's still in me. I need to be honest about that.
Right.
I had to go to therapy to be able to deal with it.
Right. Well,
anyway.
Sounds like it could be
after,
in that
after
like it
a year. It's in this. If you read this, you'll see that story. And I don't want to give too much away about the book.
Yeah.
But we finally went to family court because I didn't think my kids should be out of my life, not based on that.
Right.
The people in the fellowship believed her, but the judge did not. The judge said, I've been on this. She interviewed everybody. The judge interviewed all of us separately.
Yeah.
And she said, I've been on this. I remember the words just about verbatim. I have been on this bench over 30 years, and I've never had children of an abusive father asked to be with that father.
Right.
She said, I don't believe this man was beating you up. I don't believe it. Therefore, I'm going to award him custody. She gave me full custody. And do you know how difficult it is for a man to get full custody? I got full custody, including child support. Okay?
Wow.
I know. I was so disgusted that people would gather and come down on me like that, that I told the guy who was sponsoring me, in recovery, you have a sponsor if you want to see recovery through.
Right.
And I told him, I'm no longer making meetings in the city. I'm going out to where the white people gather. I'm going out to Montgomery County. That is not unfamiliar to me. I'm going to be the only black one in all the meetings I can go to because I'm disgusted with my people. I don't believe they did what they did. My sponsor said, as long as you continue making meetings, go out there. Do what you got to do for your recovery. Just don't stay away from meetings.
Well, you know what?
So I go out.
Martin, can I just say
I'm
something?
Sorry.
I just want to say I wouldn't hold it against people of color. I think it's just because most people will listen to the woman than they will before the man. And that's what I think happened. Yeah, I do. I don't think it had anything to do with the race. You know,
well,
I mean, but it was your experience. I'm just, that's my personal opinion. I mean, if a
woman, I accept that.
If a woman is saying that a man is beating her, I think people are going to believe the woman, even if they're best friends. I don't know. I don't know. It's not right. That's for sure. It's not right. And people have been accused of crimes for being accused of something that nobody can prove only because it's hearsay. And that's horrible. That's horrible. But I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I just felt that that's what I think really why.
Well, you're entitled to that. I give that to you. But I experienced it.
Of course.
And I couldn't believe anyone was doing that to me, let alone my people, my own people, you know?
Right. Well, especially
I have custody of my children, and we have been making meetings, my children and I, before I went out to Montgomery County, where the predominant people in the meetings were Caucasian. And I got there, and I experienced something altogether different with regard to recovery. The way we approached it, the way we handled the recovery experience, the way we treated each other. And I need to say, I was astounded by my experience, you know? And I don't want to say, and I didn't want to leave the impression that, oh, black people did that, because everybody didn't turn against me. No, right. A lot of people helped me regardless of what they were hearing. I could tell they didn't believe it. I just couldn't believe anyone would do that. Involve themselves in someone's family. Right. I couldn't believe it. But when I got out to Montgomery County and I started making meetings, and it was a hell of an experience. I need to say, when I was 8, I was sent to another school, to an all-white school, because I was reading on a 10th grade level. Mm-hmm. And they told me my neighborhood school wasn't challenging enough for me. Mm-hmm. When I was in high school, I was an all-everything basketball player. Mm-hmm. But I got shot when I was 15. Mm-hmm. The bullet is still in me. Yeah. And I transferred from an all-black high school to an all-white high school. Mm-hmm. So being around a predominant Caucasian setting, wasn't unsettling to me, nor was it new. I had done that all my life.
Right.
So when I got to Montgomery County, I was so surprised that I went to meetings consecutively 6 years and 9 months without coming back to the city. And in all that time, in a lot of the meetings, I was the only African American. Mm-hmm. And I never ran into so little racism as I ran into when I attempted to recover in Montgomery County. Mm-hmm. In 6 years, 9 months, I can only think of 3 instances where I could attribute the behavior to racism. Mm-hmm. And that is not much at all. Most of the people, I will say, 95-98% of the people I met, their whole goal was to stop using drugs and find a new way of life. They didn't care about race. They didn't care about who was helping them, who gave them information. They only wanted to stop getting high. Right. And we shared that.
In the book, do you share other people's stories that you were with in recovery?
The whole book is about other people's stories as seen by me, from my perception. I experienced it, and this is what I got out of it. This is what it meant to me, you know?
Yeah. So basically the book is your struggle with your getting to addiction, your struggle coming out of addiction, and basically getting to where you are today, I guess. Yes? Does that sound like a good synopsis?
Yes. I couldn't. There's no way I could be where I'm at without the help of all of those people. Even the negative experiences helped me. Everything helped me. It made me realize how strong I am and how much purpose I have, that I wasn't deterred by anything. That made me feel good about me.
They say it takes a village, and it doesn't mean for just kids. It's for everybody. You know, we all need to help each other out no matter what, you know, and be as one. So, and like I said, with all those people, look where you are today. I mean, you're in an amazing place in your life, which is fabulous. And we should all be in an amazing place. And when you are, you're happy. So, you know, and that's great. So how is the book doing? When did you release it?
I released it April 30th, and it's doing okay. It's doing rather well. It's so funny that you asked that, because total strangers support me. The people I know, that's their attitude. Take it or leave it. But But total strangers support me. People are really interested in what I write, who I don't know anything about.
Right. Well, you know what? They may be going through something themselves, you know, and need some guidance and not coming forth in a not coming forward in a forthcoming, you know, way and going in a roundabout way, saying that they need help too and are appreciative of what you can share with them to help them, because I'm sure the book is could be considered almost like a self-help book, yes, for someone who is going through troubles like that.
Without a doubt. Anyone who reads this will benefit anyone, whether you're in recovery or not.
Right.
If you're not in recovery, you'll get an idea of what it is to suffer from the disease of addiction and how difficult it is recovering.
Right.
If you are in recovery, you can relate all the way through.
Right.
Hey, Martin. Well, Martin,
go ahead,
A lot of people, you know, sometimes, you know, there's a lot of sick people who don't like the fact that you're getting better and you're improving, your life is getting better. They don't want you to get better because, you know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy for themselves. They're jealous, I think. And that's why I think you come upon a lot of people who, you know, were not against you, but, you know, weren't supporting you as much as you thought they would, because maybe they could never get to that level that you rose to, and they were just jealous and they were pissed off.
Mm.
You hit the nail. How do you know that? You hit the nail on the head.
I used to be a recovery
addict?
No, I used to be a therapist. So I counsel people with drug addiction too, yeah. So, yeah.
Okay, you hit the nail on the head.
No, they're not. Yeah.
They're not happy for you. They're not. And, like, again, like with my children's mother, it's not everybody who's not happy for you. Like I said, I wouldn't be here if not for the people who supported me, who helped me get clean and support me. They supported me when I was raising my children. When I got my custody of my children, my son was 7 and my daughter was 6. And the amazing thing is, it wasn't new. When I was a child, I'm the youngest of 9 children.
Wow.
So there were always babies around the house. My sisters, I had a brother who was 23 years older than me.
Wow.
There was always babies in the house.
Hey, Marty,
and what would they do? They would say... They would say, well, I'm going out. We'll leave the kids with Martin. Mm. So I knew how to change diapers, make a bottle, prepare a meal ever since I was 10 years old.
Wow.
So when I got the care of my kids, I was already experienced in how to deal with children. Mm. And that amazed me. That if anyone doesn't believe in God, they haven't had my experience.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, you said that, you know, your parents passed when you were so young. What happened to the rest of the kids? You come from a family of 9. I mean, did they all go separate ways as well, or did everybody wind up?
Well, we paired off.
Mm.
I had a sister who wasn't quite 2 years older than me. She and I made it to Philadelphia. We stayed in touch till she passed. May she rest in peace.
Yes, yeah,
I have sisters. I broke the tie. 4 sisters and 4 brothers. And I want to say, everybody's gone. I'm the only one left. No parents, no brothers, no sisters.
Wow.
And we all paired off. A brother and sister stayed with each other. My oldest brother took care of some. And we went. We did it like that. And it wasn't easy. I mean, no one can tell me there's not a God. Things would happen, and I knew only God could do that.
Yeah.
I will never forget I had an efficiency when I was in college, when I was in undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember moving in having no money, nothing. And I remember saying to my sister, the one who was close in age to me. I don't have any money. I'm hungry. I'm scared. And you know what she said to me?
No.
She said, well, you've been there before. Imagine if you haven't. And it just made me, it filled me with strength. It's nothing new. You can get through this, is what she was saying in essence.
Right.
And I did. Right. I did. I got through it.
Well, Martin, would you say that your childhood or the life that you had growing up brought you to the state of addiction or no?
I'll say it did. Say it did. I mean, when I was 15, I got shot. There's nothing more frightening than you got a bullet in you. The bullet is still in me. You got a bullet in you. You're going to the hospital. And you got no parents, nobody to see you through that. That was so frightening. When I was a sophomore in college, four guys came in my room, my dorm room. My roommate left the door open. He always did that, and he studied at 2, 3 in the morning. Mm. I woke up with a shotgun in my face. Four people in my room, three guns. They took everything I owned, everything, and tied up my roommate and I. I thought they were going to kill us.
Yeah.
You know? But when you go through that type of trauma, you know, there's a song out, George Clinton, the Funkadelics, at that time. His song said, "How do you spell relief?"
Mm.
And in order to just deal, I remember getting a college scholarship, going to the University of Pittsburgh, and being turned on to drugs. The athletes turned me on to the drugs, the other athletes. So, and when I'm feeling bad, it was always something to help smooth off the edges. That's how I looked at it.
Right.
That's how addiction starts off. It starts off with a lot of pleasure.
Mm.
Did you see Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Oh God, yeah, yeah, long time
okay.
ago.
in the very end, and they open the ark. These beautiful angels come out and turn into demons. Well, that's the life of an addict. Mm. The first part of your addiction is so beautiful. And before you know it, you're a demon. You're a demon. The drug has turned you into a demon. No one can trust you. You can't even trust yourself. Your whole life is filled with manipulation. And you're the manipulator. And that's what happened to me. And I could feel that I was persona non grata. I could feel it. And I didn't want to continue to live that way, and I lived that way for years.
Well, I mean, I can't even imagine going through all the things you've gone through, and it's just amazing to where you are now, and I'm very proud of you, Martin, after hearing
that. Martin, how long did it take you, Martin, to actually kick the heroin and start feeling better?
Oh, man, you're talking about a job. That is good Lord.
Definitely.
When you're coming off of heroin, you can't sleep. You sleep 20-minute intervals. You sweat. I sweated up the bed so bad you would have think I urinated in it. That's how wet my bed was.
Mm.
You smell because you can't stop perspiring. You stink. I don't care how many showers you take or deodorant you use. So coming off of drugs, and believe it or not, that was the easiest part. And when they told me that in the beginning, I said, they're out of their mind. Changing who you are, changing your thought process, changing the direction of your life is much harder than going through the withdrawal of drugs. Much harder. It takes longer, and it takes much more time. You have to really look at yourself. You have to want to do that. That was difficult. looking back, it took me maybe 7-8 days to stop all the pain, the physical pain, the sweating, the smelling.
Yeah.
And it took me years to get here.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you your personal opinion, and you too, John, with everything going on, do you think people are falling into, right now they're calling it maybe, I don't know about you, but I see people buying alcohol like crazy. Do you think people are possibly falling into addiction during these crazy times?
I believe
addiction,
so, yeah.
addiction is in you. It's in you. You can get drunk every day and not be an alcoholic. You can get drunk every day and stop and not be an alcoholic. If you're an alcoholic, you won't stop.
Right.
You can get high every day and stop if you're not an addict. If you are an addict, you won't stop. It's in you. It's a disease of thinking. Other people look at it other ways. This worked for me. It's a disease thinking. Having a feeling, say again.
Like they say, Martin, they say, how much do you drink? And the answer is all of it. you're an addict.
I'm really
concerned. You asked about the pandemic and people getting drunk. I'm concerned about addicts who can't gather in a meeting anymore. I just don't know how I could have stayed clean without the gathering of other addicts who already knew how to do it. I don't know what these people are doing today, and I feel so bad for them.
Well, I know my brother is a counselor, and he is seeing people, and they have not stopped. I mean, they've been doing it in Harlem, so I don't know about other places in the country, but I mean, they've been doing it since it started. They have not stopped at all. So, I mean, it's been different, he said, but they are still having meetings in New York anyway. Well, they were. I don't know if they still are. So, but you're right. A lot of places probably are not gathering, and, you know, it's giving people free rein to be home and just drink or drug or do whatever they want all day long, you know. So you don't have to go to work. So get high. You don't have to. You know what I mean?
I know.
You know.
We still have meetings online.
Yeah.
But it's something the personal touch is missing.
Right.
When you're at a meeting, I can look at you and see whether you've been getting high or not. But online, you can BS everybody. You can make yourself up, sit in front of the computer, and look great. But you can't do that when it's live.
Right.
We know you because we think like you. So
right.
We know you.
Right.
And that's what happened when I got there. They already knew me. And there's nothing more disturbing to a manipulator when other people know you. That's disturbing. You got to come clean. You can't BS them. And that's the difference in what's going on today.
Right. Well, other than the book, which is helpful to people, are you involved in counseling with people? Are you a sponsor for someone, or are you just taking care of yourself?
Oh, I can't just take care of myself. If I do that, then I'm going against everything the fellowship is about.
Right.
We have a saying, you can only keep what you have by giving it away. I'm telling you, I have met people who have done things that astounded me. I just can't. Like some of the women, when they helped me raise my children, the stuff they did, and I don't mean just African-American women. I mean Caucasian, Latino women, Asian women, women, period, helped me raise my children. That's a heck of a thing to go through when people are giving and they don't want anything in return. What they want is for you to get better the way they did.
Right.
That's a hell of a thing.
That's all we should want from each other.
Well, that's not always so, you know?
Well, of course it's not. That's what I'm saying. That's what we should want and expect from each other. But that's not the case. You're absolutely right. I know.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. It made a better... Let me tell you, and I was just talking to a close friend of mine about this. Sponsoring people made me a better parent. And here's why. When you're coming to recovery and you lie to people and they know it, you don't want to, you don't tell them straight out. You meet them where they're at. Okay, you know, if you want to keep doing that, this is the lesson I got. You can go to the hospital with a foot injury and tell them your hand is hurting. They'll treat your hand, and you'll still have the foot injury. So you might as well come clean about what's troubling you. Then I go home to my children, and I worked with children while raising my children. Then I go home to my children, and I let them know I cannot help you. I don't care what you do. I cannot help you if you lie to me.
Right.
So I got better communication with my children. I became a better listener because I had to listen to addicts trying to recover. It made me a better parent and a better person and a giving person. You can't go through that kind of experience and be selfish. It's not possible.
Right, and I would think help being a sponsor and helping others is only helping your recovery. You know, it's helping you become a better person too. So, oh God, Martin, your story was amazing. Oh my geez, I had no idea. And where can folks get the new book, Recovery in Black and White in America?
Okay, you can get it at Google Books. You can get it at Dorrance Publishing. They're my publisher. You can get it at Barnes & Noble, eBay. You can get it at any of those sites. And I want to leave a number. Can I do that?
Absolutely. Whatever you like. Absolutely.
Okay. You can order it tonight. 800-788-7654. You can order it right away by calling that number. And
say
I suggest
again.
Any...
Martin,
pardon?
Say it again. Say it again, please. I want to write it down so I can share it with everyone.
Okay.
Later.
Okay. 800-788-7654.
Got it.
You can call that and order it right away.
Excellent.
It'll help anyone.
Right. Well, it sounds like a great book and definitely something to help people out who are struggling and definitely need it. So I'm hoping everybody listening, if you're having a little problem or struggling and Martin's proof, you can come out the other side and the book will help you do that. And you can always call. This is not your personal number, Martin, right?
No, it's the number to the publisher.
Yeah, because I was going to tell everybody to call there to talk to you.
No, you'll reach the publisher.
You know what, Martin? If anybody did want to talk to you, I know that you'd be more than happy to help them. Where could they reach out to you? Because I know you wouldn't mind helping somebody out. So, like, how could anybody reach you other than Facebook, or is it strictly Facebook?
Well, I can leave a number, and I can leave my email address.
Okay.
My email address. Okay.
My email address.
MartinLee229@yahoo.com.
Excellent.
Should I leave a number?
No, let them just email you.
No,
but
you'll get all kinds of weird calls, Martin.
Exactly.
Trust me.
No.
Exactly.
I don't need that.
No. Well, I don't know. I thank you so much, Martin. I'm so glad we finally got to talk, and your story just touched my heart, and it is an amazing story, and I'm so happy for you. and extremely proud that you are where you are. And that's a tough fight, you know? It's a tough fight. And you did it.
It is. It is. Yes, I did. And I, the thing is, and I want to say this before we go, you did it, and you have to keep doing it.
Right.
It's a disease of thinking, and it never leaves you alone. I don't
right.
care how clean you are or how long you haven't been drunk. It checks in. Your life is well. You can have a drink. Go ahead, man. Do one hit. You haven't been high in 5 years. It does
right.
that to all of us.
Right.
So you got to keep at it. I
right.
just wanted to say that.
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Martin. John, anything else for Martin, hon?
No, it's just an amazing story, Martin. And thank you for helping everybody. And
yeah.
I'm sure that's, you know, what you'll put on earth to do to help other people. So good luck with everything.
Sounds like it.
Thank you both. And thank you for having me. This is great. This is a great experience.
Martin, you know I love you. I'm so sorry that I've been a little out of touch lately. But I wish you all the best with the book. And you keep on, hey, keep on keeping on, you know. So yeah, we're going to do that. So everybody check out the Martin Lee's new book. It's Martin J. Lee. And you can find it at booktopia.com. I mean, it's everywhere. And we're going to give out Martin's email later. And you could also call to order the book tonight and any other night, right? Not just tonight. People could use this phone number to call, correct?
You can. You can. And I want to make one thing clear. They
yes,
after hours, they stop. So you can call and order up to about 6 p.m. So
right.
I shouldn't have said tonight. I'm sorry.
Okay, so it's 800-788-7654. And if
that's
you would like to, and if you would like to reach out to Martin, he is more than happy to help you out if you need something, and he'll guide you where you can go, at least if he can't help you personally. So it's martinlee229@yahoo.com. Mr. Lee, thank you. It's been a
thank
pleasure.
You,
thank you
so much. You take
thank
care.
You for having me. Thank you for
All
listening.
Right. Oh, please.
Thank you.
Touch me. Yes. Take care, Martin. Thank you so much for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, Martin Lee, thank you. Oh,
God
what
bless.
A show tonight. God bless you. What a show tonight. Oh, my God. Joe, Lewis Walker, come on. I mean, I you didn't tell me you were nervous, Johnny.
Oh, it's my guitar hero.
You didn't tell me. You didn't tell me.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's so cool that you got we got to talk to him tonight, you know. A nice guy. Oh, my God.
Oh, aren't super they, nice. Super nice.
Every guest. You know that. And also,
I,
Mr. Martin.
I think I can only think of one guest, Joanne. You remember
yeah,
that one guest who wasn't the nicest person in the entire universe, so we'll just leave it at that. But,
we'll just say he was female. It was a female type of person. So we both know we have the right person, so... But anyway, I know we got to run, but who we got coming up Wednesday, Johnny? I forgot. Oh, you
Ernest
know what?
Brandine.
Yeah, right. No, what's the Lemon Pledge guy?
Oh, Blind Lemon Pledge.
Yeah.
Blind Lemon Pledge, the blues guitarist.
Yeah, actually, we have been getting a lot of compliments, John, for our website lately. We are still...
Oh, it looks great.
Yeah, we're still getting closer to completion, but I mean, for us to get so many compliments without it being totally completed is just amazing. And you guys can check it out at www.applauseradioshow.com, and that is the site is being done by Oleander Public Relations. So, and they're also one of our sponsors. So, if you guys are looking for a website, please don't hesitate to reach out and. Get a great site like us, too. All right, coming up, real quick. Yeah, real quick, July 12th, July 19th, I can't wait for this. Barbra Streisand's sister, Rosalind Cummings, a singer in her own right, and damn good.
And also actress Ruta Lee. Oh, my God. You remember Ruta. Oh, my God. And then the 22nd, we've got author Stan Goldman and Anthony Williams from Happy Days will be coming back. We had to reschedule his date. And the 26th, we're going to have a call-in psychic for you guys, Jared Hewitt. He's an author, and he's also a psychic, and we're going to take some calls for you guys. And Mr. Stephen Taibbi, he's an author. This is going to be a great story, John. It's about him being the recipient of being a donor, I believe, of his heart. I'm not actually sure.
Wow.
100%. And he actually goes, he meets these people, and I think they are like family to this day. And also actress
wow.
Julia Benjamin. So that's going to be a cool story. But, yeah, and August is shaping up really nice, and we're going to go from there. And thanks again to the sponsors, the High Bar and Bistro, Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video, Kittnersville, Pennsylvania, KWB Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times and other stuff in Clifton, New Jersey, Syntech Productions in Oak Harbor, New Jersey. I don't have that much breath to do it all in one breath. Oleander Public Relations in Texas. Take a Break from Cancer.org for Pete's sake. And our new member of the family, Joey Max, the Hot Dog Truck Cafe. It's a gourmet truck, and they got seating, pickup, delivery. They're in Harrison, New Jersey. Check them out. Thank you all so very much. Thank you to Joe Lewis Walker and Martin Lee and Johnny. Always thank you so much. I love you.
We will see everybody on Sunday, correct?
Yeah, don't threaten me, but I'll be there. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Don't threaten me with a good time. All right, guys.
All right, everybody.
Take care.
Good night, everyone.
Goodbye.